Welcome to Be Inspired, your ultimate resource for finding inspiration so we as a collective can live consciously and creatively in a rapidly changing world. I'm your host, Francesca, and today's episode is an artist talk with Kristen Alacock, whose work is currently on exhibit at the gallery in the Queen Elizabeth Park Community and Cultural Center, and that's in Oakville, for the 2025 Black History Month Art Exhibition presented by the Canadian Caribbean Association of Halton. Kristen's work is it's rich with symbolism and storytelling and a deep connection to heritage. And her Ankh series, featured in this exhibit, explores themes of identity and resilience and legacy. All of this we will further explore in our conversation. So today we're going to dive into her creative process and the importance of art in shaping cultural narratives. Kristen, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for being here. So usually I would read through a bio, but today instead I would prefer that you tell the audience here, what would you like us to know about you?
Sure. So I always love this question because I never really know what to say. I am an artist, as stated before. I'd like to say sometimes a multidisciplinary artist because mm-hmm. I feel like I do wear many hats from time to time. So I do anything from, writing to videography to a little bit of photography. Mm-hmm. I work with mixed media or acrylics mostly, and also digital art, making things from resin, namely like jewelry or accessories and things of that nature. But primarily, I would consider myself a visual artist. Mm-hmm. But again, that title can change based on, whatever project I'm taking on. Yes. And whatever hat I need to wear. So my practice blends, painting, digital art. I use a lot of vibrant, saturated colors, layered textures to, evoke an emotion or some form of I call it minimalistic layered storytelling. Mm-hmm. And I pull a lot from, just from my inner and outer worlds, really, just from experiencing the world. I go by how I feel. And, also the awareness of what's happening, in and around me on a, either regional or global scale. All of those things can influence my work as an artist. That's me as an artist in a nutshell. But okay. I've been featured in exhibitions across Ontario, in Toronto, Brampton, in Halton. I've had the pleasure of being a part of the Emancipation exhibition mm-hmm. at the Henson Gallery mm-hmm. for the last few years. So that's been great. I've also had my work showcased in the Pixel Digital Art exhibition here in Brampton, as well in a projected art exhibition with Make Room as well, called Pathways to Ancestral Knowledge. I've done some collaborative work with community-driven projects, such as the Little Jamaica Land Trust project with Black Urbanism Toronto.
Oh, nice.
Mm-hmm. And as well as some t-shirt designs for Performing Arts Brampton. So, in addition to that, I do a lot of artist markets as well across the GTA. I also offer, I can host workshops as well. Uh-huh. For like paint nights or, crafting things for the youth, corporate, group, private events, anything like that. So a Jackie of all trades, if you will.
Yes, most definitely. And thank you for sharing that. I mean, you're in the exhibit here at the gallery out here in Oakville, but you also have some pieces on exhibit at the town hall, or at the town for Oakville as well. So, yeah. I mean, between these two exhibits and everything else that you're doing, you certainly keep yourself very busy. And on top of that, you do work full time, right?
I do.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. So let's get into this and explore a little bit more about your artist journey, because I wanted to start the conversation and sort of open up the dialogue and have you tell us more about what's inspired you as an artist and how your own artistic style has evolved over time.
So, you know, from as long as I can remember, I've always been drawn to creating. Mm-hmm. From a child, you know, I was very tactile with my hands. I loved working with, you know, with like Play-Doh and like paints and, you know, creating things in the sandbox, you know, little architectural, you know, designs and, you know, working with Lego. So I've always just been drawn to that. In addition to just, you know, things like that, just music as well was a big part of mm-hmm. my life and still is. Mm-hmm. You know, so the inspiration to be an artist wasn't necessarily something that had to come. It was just something that always was, you know, it's just something that always just came naturally to me. But the inspiration for me to pursue art on the level that I am now more professionally, really came from a push from my father just shortly before he passed suddenly. And it's interesting when I reflect upon that, just the timing and all that, because I remember coming out of high school when I'm trying to figure out, okay, what do I want to do? At that time of my life, it was between graphic design or radio broadcasting, which is interesting. So, or photography. And I remember having that conversation with my father, and he was never discouraging, but he was a very practical man. So he was always like, well, you know, you can definitely pursue those as like a side business, but you want to find something that's a little bit more stable where you have like, you know, a steady income coming in, cause you know, you still have to live and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, while there was reason and, you know, logic behind what he was saying at the time, I was just like, ugh, I just want to be an artist. I just want to create. I just want to put stuff out into the world and make the world a little bit more brighter. But again, there's that like that sort of subconscious conditioning, you know, not just from, you know, cultural stuff, but also, you know, just, you know, with schooling and the type of like capitalistic society that we live in, we're often mm-hmm. driven to those types of pathways, right? Of having that more structured and more, you know, safe ways of making a living. But fast forward to that moment in 2021 when, you know, him and I were having this conversation, and, you know, throughout the years, it was always like a back and forth with him and I. And for the last like few years leading up to that point, he was really encouraging me to register as a business. But my confidence as an actor, as a full-fledged artist, wasn't really there. I never called myself that. I never felt mm-hmm. comfortable. Mm-hmm. You know, I dealt with a little bit of imposter syndrome that I'm sure mm-hmm. a lot of, you know, creatives and artists can relate to. And it was because I didn't have that that technical background, that strong foundational background, you know, with schooling and training. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I never taken an art class at that point. Anything that I learned at that point was from my own doing. So I didn't feel like I was being authentic enough by calling myself an artist, because I felt that I needed those fundamentals mm-hmm. in order to do so. So, yeah.
So you're a self-taught artist then. Is that correct? Sorry? You're a self-taught artist?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So I have no formal training. I didn't go to art school, although I wanted to, but I never did, because I was in French immersion as a kid. So there was not a lot of wiggle room for me to take any additional classes outside of the prerequisites. And I did more technological based media courses. But in terms of like fine arts programs and courses, no, it wouldn't be till later on in university that I took a few of those. That I actually was minoring in fine arts. But the funny thing about that is that the majority of the classes that I took then was also video based and technological based. So, but yeah, so I finally registered as a business, and, you know, I was getting little gigs here and there. And it wasn't until I had the opportunity to exhibit a large piece that I did in a group show here in Brampton in a gallery that is sadly closed, but mm-hmm. it was a community staple for a while called Beaux Arts. I was part of that artist collective there as well, mm-hmm. For the time being before the pandemic got a hold of that. It didn't survive, unfortunately.
Oh, okay.
But I was commissioned to create a piece in collaboration with an organization called Revive Here. But at the time it was called Hope 24/7, and it was an organization that, you know, helped women coming out of, how do I put it? They come out of, like, you know, domestic situations, okay, or, mm-hmm, you know, things of that nature, right, and, you know, giving them a space and giving them resources and opportunities to pull themselves out of those situations, mm-hmm, to, you know, continue on with their life and away from that. So I was really honored to be asked to participate in that.
Mm-hmm.
And because it was meaningful work. So for me as an artist, I want to create things that can contribute something to society. You know, I'm not just making art because it's pretty or because, like, I can make money off of it. It's really just, I want people to find joy from it. I want people to find inspiration from it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really my driving force behind the things that I create, first and foremost. So that opportunity, I found it was like, it felt very aligned with who I am and where I was trying to go. So that, in conjunction with, you know, the situation with my father, that really kind of just thrusted me into this direction of saying, you know what? I'm doing it. I'm pursuing this art career professionally on a level that I've always wanted to. And just for whatever reason, never felt, you know, I guess, confident enough to. And I did it. So
you certainly did do it. And you're taking all of that natural talent that you have with being creative and porting it into a business that makes sense for you. And I think that's what's interesting for all artists is you don't all do it the same way. You come at it in many different ways that work with yourselves in the moment, and you have to be fluid because things change. So, you know, you might run your business one way today and that might change over time, but you're doing what you are meant to do naturally. And I think it was such wise words from your father before he did pass on, that he was also being very practical and giving you that practical advice and being very, very wise with his words, that I think you took it all in and, you know, made your own decisions to do things, as I said, that make sense for you to be contributing artists, as you say, to society, and to be able to give something that inspires people and gives them hope as well. I see that also in some of your work, which, you know, leads me into another question of how I just love how your work is so, it's deeply personal, yet it universally resonates, if that makes sense. So I'm thinking now specifically of your Ankh series, which is particularly powerful, and that is what we have here at the gallery for the Canadian Caribbean Association's art exhibition. You have two beautiful pieces on exhibit here, and I just wanted to find out more about what led you to focus on the symbolism that's represented in this work.
Yeah, so thank you for the kind words. I appreciate that. Yeah. And I'm glad that, you know, my work is being appreciated like that. It means a lot, you know, when I hear feedback like that.
You're welcome.
And comments from others. So thank you.
Mm-hmm.
At the time when I was creating this piece, it was the moment where I was really just paying attention to what was happening within the diaspora and the sort of the chatter that I was seeing a lot of online and the content that was being, you know, posted, and sort of just like the divisive rhetoric between Black men and women. Mm-hmm. And it was really upsetting to me.
Okay.
Because historically, you know, our ancestors were a part of a system that fundamentally broke down, you know, the Black family. Like, it broke broke the home mm-hmm. up, you know, because due to the byproducts of slavery and colonialism and mm-hmm. capitalism and all that good stuff. Well, sorry, not the good stuff. Let me correct myself. All of that bad stuff. But mm-hmm. the point that I'm trying to get at is that seeing this divisive rhetoric, you know, of people kind of like, you know, black men pitting themselves against black women, and just that it was just very hateful and very angry. It was just a lot of like, well, mm-hmm. we don't need you. And, you know, all these stereotypes and negative stigmas that are placed upon both, you know, black women and women. I'm like, this is wild to me, you know, because as a community, we've been so dispersed and separated, you know, not by our own will, that we should be trying to find ourselves after all of this time to be more of a community and more together and
to unite.
Mm-hmm. We do need each other and be united, right? Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. So a lot of that was going through my mind and reflecting a lot of that. I mean, I wasn't getting involved in the chatter online because I didn't want to become a keyboard, you know, warrior and kind of like argue the struggles on the internet.
But, right. Yeah.
You know, so I was just more observing from, you know, like a wallflower, and I was thinking like, okay, what can my contribution be? If I don't want to be vocal about it or exhaust myself with arguing with people that just want to argue, how can I contribute to this? And, you know, the symbolism of the ankh has always been something, you know, growing up in my adulthood, especially when I was exploring my spirituality and my connection to God and religion and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. Looking at the symbols that, you know, were used in like Christianity, I was born and raised an Anglican. Mm-hmm. I, you know, so the symbol of the cross and, you know, of Jesus on the cross and all that stuff is, you know, very big in Christianity. Mm-hmm. I don't find myself being a practicing Anglican, mm-hmm. but those fundamentals are definitely there. But, you know, exploring spirituality and what it means to me, and especially looking at it from a cultural aspect and from an ancestral aspect, and looking at our going back to our roots, you know, the ankh symbolism, the symbol represents the eternal life and balance, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
Representative mm-hmm. of, you know, the male and female gender. I know that, you know, a lot of people don't subscribe to that so much anymore, but again, at its core, at its roots, it symbolizes both, you know, female male parts that both are needed to create this interconnection, right, of this circle of life,
right,
this balance,
right,
and connecting that through, you know, our black identity. And I feel like that represents also our resilience and our legacy. So creating these two counterparts, which, you know, when I do present them, I often say that while they were created to be displayed together, they can also be displayed separately, because even though as black men and women, when we are together, we are such a powerful force and we do need each other, right? Mm-hmm. Alone, standing alone, we are also very powerful forces. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So the goddess of infinity, right? That is a tribute to black femininity. And it features like most of my work, faceless figure. And
well, I was just going to take it there. That would have been the next step, is let's talk about the meaning behind the faceless figures, because in these two pieces that we have in the gallery, they are faceless. And that's what makes, I think, some of your work so striking, is the use of the faceless figures. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this choice, it really challenges people to engage differently in the art. And I've seen it firsthand, being at the gallery and watching people stand in front of your art and observing and just taking it in. So let's talk more about the facelessness and what that represents in this work.
Yeah. And so the faceless figures is 100% intentional, because, mm-hmm. you know, like I said earlier, my contribution to the world, you know, I want to leave part of my legacy of work that people can resonate with. They can see themselves in it. Mm-hmm. And that's the intention behind the faceless figures, because when I want somebody to when somebody's looking at my work, I want them to be able to see themselves in it. I want them, you know, I don't want their experience or their feelings or, you know, their thoughts about what they're taking in be skewed by, you know, a face that was imagined by me, you know. I don't want them to feel separated. I want them to be able to immerse themselves into the piece. Mm-hmm. And so that's the intention behind it. So again, with the figure of the goddess of infinity and the god of eternity, you know, like the god of eternity is honoring Black masculinity, right? Mm-hmm. It symbolizes, you know, the strength and the, you know, creativity and just that, you know, the grounding presence, you know, that that a Black man within the community is, right? And then as for the woman, you know, represents wisdom and resilience and, you know, elegance, you know what I mean? So all these things, I want people who are taking it in. And again, the art that I create, and it's not to not be inclusive or to exclude others, but representation is what's really big for me in mm-hmm. the work that I create, and hence why most of my work features, you know, people that look like me, people that look like you, and, you know, anybody within the Black diaspora. I create the work for us because growing up, I did not see a lot of that. And when there was representation of the Black diaspora within the art world, whether it be visual or video or photography or whatever, it was full of, you know, it talks about the historical pain and struggle and the sadness and the, mm-hmm. you know, that we had to endure. And then, like, you know, while some of this work was created with good intention to show that through all of that, we're able to, you know, come out stronger and survive and whatever. But it was really just like, I wanted to separate us from that, you know, even in my own little world, in my little art practice, I wanted mm-hmm. to contribute to separating that narrative from the Black diaspora, that we are not just about our painful history and our struggle and, you know, us being resilient, you know, because again, we're human, mm-hmm. you know, but for example, Black women, you know, we have this trope of being, you know, like a strong Black woman and, you know, they're so resilient and you can overcome anything. And it's like, it almost erases that part of us that can allow us to be soft, you know, that allows us to be a little bit delicate and gentle and, you know, So yeah, the work here is just, I really want people to be able to see themselves and immerse themselves and feel it, whether mm-hmm. it's, they can maybe, you know, whether they can get what I'm putting out or if they interpret it in a way that makes them feel, you know, something. So that's the intention behind it.
And thank you for sharing that. I think it is so well said when you bring up the fact that as Black men and women, we are known to be so strong and so resilient. And I think there are times we get tired of hearing that because there is a whole other side to who we are as human beings. So it's really nice to hear you highlight that and talk about it. And we definitely need to have more conversations about that. And bringing up the fact that the facelessness of these pieces is intentional, but as I'm looking at it and thinking about it as well, it's universal, if I'm hearing you correct. So it's intentional, it's universal, and it's a form of empowerment rather than erasure, right? It's not getting rid of, it's empowering. And it just leaves viewers really in awe, I think, when they stand back and they're observing and they are thinking about a broader interpretation of the meaning behind all of this. So thank you for sharing your thoughts on why you've put, you know, the faceless figures, the man and the woman sort of side by side in this exhibit. It's empowering, and it's also a very touching story the way you share it. So thank you for that. And, you know, when we think about art as a a reflection of culture and social change. We've talked about identity and symbolism, but your work is also speaking to the resilience and the legacy. So how do you see art playing a role in preserving and amplifying Black cultural narratives?
Yeah, it's just another way of, you know, documenting our existence, right? Unfortunately, for a lot of us, we don't know just how far back or where exactly our beginning of our lineage begins, right? Because of that displacement. Right. A lot of things were destroyed in the process. So we were forced to create new stories and document things in our own ways. And I think just as a people, we're just creative naturally because of the circumstances that we were forced into. Like if you go back to, and you know, and it, again, it's not to fixate on the past, but it very much influences on how we are today, you know, using, you know, hair braiding as a means mm-hmm. to communicate with one another. Mm-hmm. You know, in the songs that were sung, you know, there were messages and communication through there that, you know, it was like another language that was created so that, you know, they were able to communicate with each other without, you know, other people outside of that to know what was going on. But in terms of and I feel like from that fundamentally, that's just, you know, sort of passed down into where we are now with contemporary artists, you know, creating works that share a part of that, of themselves in a way that our ancestors did in the ways that they did, you know, through music or through their hairstyles or through the clothing that they wear. It was always a physical and visual expression, you know? But I feel that, yeah, with art, it's just another way of us documenting and sharing our stories and reminding those, you know, once we pass and for those who are coming to say like, hey, you know, we were here. This is who we are or who we were. And yeah, having that, hoping, you know, to have that legacy
right.
continue.
Preserving our history as you're talking about it.
And, mm-hmm. Yeah. And because, you know, even though, you know, when we say the Black diaspora, obviously people, you know, would know what that means. It's just, but we all have our own experience and our own version of what being Black in this world means. So, you know, preserving that history, I think it's very important. And I find that art is a great way for that because you get to see everybody's unique expression. Because for most artists, I'm not going to speak definitively, but for most artists, mm-hmm. when you create, it's a piece of yourself you're giving away each time, or a piece of yourself that you're sharing with each piece that you put out there. So mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's always a story behind that. So, you know, that is the preservation. That's the legacy.
And is that how you think about the future impact of your work, with what kind of legacy you hope to leave behind? Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. You know, I haven't really given much thought to that. You know, I'm still pretty young, you know, but again, uh-huh. it should be something I probably should think about because again, we don't know what tomorrow will bring. Right. But yeah, you know, I know part of the reason why it took me so long to present my art to the world on such a public level was because it was such a big part of me, of who I am. And it was a level of vulnerability that took me a while for me to get comfortable in sharing with others. Because mm-hmm. while art was something that came naturally to me from a very young age, it became something of an outlet for me. So whenever I was going through anything in life, you know, it was a way, you know, people write in diaries, right? Or people, you know, they work out, or, you know, they go for a run or whatever. My outlet was drawing and creating, and that was that. So for, you know, a long time, it was very scary to kind of share that with strangers or just
yeah, no, I understand. Right.
So So yeah, I hope that when people, you know, once I depart this earth and people find my work or they see my work, that they'll come to know the kind of person that I was and the stories that I was trying to share, not just of myself, but for others as well.
Right. Of course.
some of my work, I do draw inspiration from, you know, the people that I meet and the conversations that I have and, you know, sharing things more as on a more communal scale. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense.
No, it certainly does. I mean, everything that you are doing, working on, and leave to move on to creating the next piece is all a part of the legacy that you will leave behind at some point. So, you know, sharing your vision and all of your inspiration, I'm certainly looking forward to seeing so much more over the next little while in your own creative process, which let's talk about that and personal connection when it comes to your creative process. Just tell me a little bit about your typical day at the studio. What does that look like for you?
So yeah, every day that I create looks a little bit different.
So do you create every day would be my question.
I try to. So mm-hmm. whether like I tend to carry my iPad with me wherever I go. I started carrying my sketchbook, my little sketchbook with me again, because I found myself needing to go back to pencil drawing because I haven't done that in years. I've been doing a lot of painting and digital stuff but I walk with those things with me. Do I touch them every day? No, but I try to do something a little creative every day. But on a day that I can, like, for example, I'm off work today, so I have, you know, the whole day to do whatever I want. A typical day would be a lot of bouncing around from different tasks, to be honest. And then I'll start the process, and then I'll start the piece. I'll zero in and hyper focus for maybe like 3 hours. Then I'll take a break. I don't have a particular process per se. Depending on what it is that I'm working with or having to do or wanting to do, there is. So, you know what? Hang on. Let me stop rambling and let me just take some. Let me just kind of gather my thoughts a little bit. Okay. So if I'm working on a piece that's not of just for my own, me doing it for fun, but like I say, if I have something to do that requires a little bit of research, you know, I will take some time out on to do that. So whether that's on Google or flipping through, you know, old magazines that I have lying around, or even just going out, you know, to the bookstore. Like I find a lot of, you know, before I create that, I like to either go to a bookstore or to a gallery or just something that can.
That's your inspiration where it might
spur some. Yeah. You know, like I tell people all the time that on days where I know I feel the urge that I want to create, but I just can't get myself started, I would either go to the bookstore. I would go to Michael's sometimes, even just walking around in Michael's in the craft store, you know, can kind of give that energy that, you know, that I need for that day to create. But yeah, I mean, my typical day just depends on what it is that I'm creating. Mm-hmm. But when I hyper focus in and I will work straight for a few hours.
Right.
And then, you know, I take a step back. I've learned that when I get to the point, my stopping point, because it gets a little bit obsessive sometimes when I get, you know,
okay. Working. Right. Right.
But mm-hmm. I find what is very helpful is that the moment that I find myself nitpicking and fixating and starting to like not like what I'm creating, is that that's my signal to step away. And then I either step away for the remainder of that day or I step away for a couple hours.
Come back to it later. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let's.
I don't really have a structured process, and I'm so sorry for the listeners that are looking for.
That's okay. We just want to know how you create, what gets it all going, what starts those thoughts for you.
Yeah, it can vary again, and it depends on what it is that I need to get done.
Sure.
It kind of goes back, like the best way I can illustrate what I'm trying to say is when people ask me if I'm a morning person or if I'm a night owl, and my answer is always I'm whatever I need to be based on what I have to do the next day.
Okay. No, that makes makes perfect sense. Well, let's take that hyper focus and turn it into some rapid fire questions for you just to have a little fun. Okay. And just about just a handful of questions. We'll do the rapid fire. So let's start with, what's your favorite color to paint with?
Pinks and purples and yellows. I find them very drawn to. Yeah.
Pinks, purples, and yellows. Okay. Yeah. Describe your art style in three words.
Contemporary, colorful, and geometric, I guess, because I use a lot of shapes and a lot of
okay. Line, contemporary, line colorful, and geometric. I love it. Okay, if you could have dinner with any artist, dead or alive, who would it be?
You know what? Since it's rapid fire, I'm not going to look at it too much. The first person that comes to mind is Sandra Brewster, and she's Canadian. She's also of Guyanese heritage. So she focuses more on like photography and how do I explain her work? Her work is brilliant. Her work is brilliant. And it's like kind of like collage work. She does these real like large scale photography pieces.
For us to look up, and we'll do the research on Sandra Brewster. No, is that what you great. Said?
She's also Toronto-based, which is also amazing.
Canadian Guyanese as well. Okay.
She's very much alive still.
Okay. Perfect. Yeah. Thank you. Let's go on to the next one. What is the one art tool that you can't live without?
Paint markers.
Paint markers.
They just give me that nice, clean, precise, finished look that I love.
Okay. Yeah. And what's the best advice you have ever received from an artist or as an artist?
The best advice that I have received was to just to not be so humble.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Cause I was very, I minimized my accomplishments a lot, and I was very, very humble, almost to a fault. And I had a conversation with somebody, and they just said, "No, be loud, be proud, and you know,
own it." Well, let's see how you can make sure you're not humble, too humble with the next question, and tell us if you could have your work displayed anywhere in the world, where would it be?
I really love the Brooklyn Museum. I mean, I would love to be in the art gallery because, you know, I'm all about homegrown, but I visited the Brooklyn Gallery for the first time like maybe six or seven years ago at this point. And I don't know what it is. I've always been drawn to Brooklyn for some reason, and every time I go there, I always feel like this is where I need to be. And I have no idea if my connection to New York is just because of just how much I loved the Harlem Renaissance and learning about that through my studies. But yeah, the Brooklyn Museum. I know some people are probably thinking, oh, the Louvre or like the MoMA or, you know, but.
No, I think the Brooklyn Museum is perfect answer. It's perfect. And the last question I have is, what's your go-to playlist or your music genre while you're creating?
I love like lo-fi hip hop. I like something that's very, very vibey and chill, but still have like a nice little drum beat, you know?
That's perfect. Perfect. That was fun. I learned so much about you, actually. And thanks for playing along. You know, it just, as we keep the dialogue and the conversation going here and talking about advice for emerging artists and what's next, for aspiring artists and especially those from the underrepresented communities, what advice do you have to give them about finding their voice through art?
Honestly, the best advice that I could give, and this is just based on my personal experience, is to just do it. I mean, not to sound like Nike, but just do the damn thing, you know? Just don't overthink yourself to death, you know? I was, and still am to an extent, but that was a lot of my hesitation. I was the main roadblock in my art and getting it out there and getting the opportunities and being able to contribute and you know, share my work with the world. It was me. I was, you know.
So you're saying get over yourself is what you're saying.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, okay.
Basically. Right. And you know, whatever you do for your artwork, don't compare it to others, you know, because your unique style is unique to you. And I always say that there's an audience for everything. So yeah, that's get out of your own way and just create. And don't wait for opportunities to come knock at your door. Don't wait for seats to be, you know, provided for you at a table, and don't shy away from spaces that may not, you know, have a lot of works or represents artists that look like you. You know, you still walk into that room with your head high and know that you're just as worthy as everybody else that's in that space.
Perfect advice. So, advice for the aspiring artists out there. And so what's next for you? Upcoming projects or collaborations that you're working on? What do we have to look forward to?
So right now I do have I'm doing some workshops and stuff for, like, you know, corporate and private events. And again, just focusing on some personal stuff right now and just creating works. Because I feel like I've been kind of caught in a little bit of monotony of life right now. But it is winter, so I do give myself grace.
Of course.
But what I'm hoping for, you know, in the future is for more curatorial opportunities.
Okay.
You know, I have had the pleasure of working with you, and I thank you for that.
Yes, you're so welcome.
It was wonderful to, you know, work with you and to learn under you in the world of curation. So, because that's something that I've always wanted to do and would love to continue to do going forward. Okay. And yeah, just more community driven projects. I'm hoping to get into some mural work this year. Larger scales.
Yes.
Art on a larger scale for me this year. That's what I'm putting out there.
Well, it's been my pleasure mentoring you through this whole process, because if people don't know that you, as much as you're in the exhibit with some of your pieces, you were very, very instrumental behind the scenes helping coordinate having 16 artists in the gallery for this exhibit. So thank you for all your help and your support. And this has been such an inspiring conversation, and I want to thank you for sharing your journey and your wisdom and all the powerful meaning behind your work. And before we wrap up, I think it's important that you just kind of let us know where we can find you. Like, where do you spend most of your time on social media? Is it Instagram, like communicating with your own audience?
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram. So the art of KDA. So,
okay.
Yeah. At the art of KDA. So those are my initials.
Okay.
Find me there. Also my website, theartofkda.com. I am also on TikTok under the same name. I don't post as frequently as there, but you know, I'm always welcoming new followers, so you can find me there as well.
Instagram, TikTok. Are you also on Facebook if people wanted to connect?
Yes.
Okay.
You can also find me on Facebook.
Great.
Also under the art of KDA. But if you want to connect more directly, you can also email me at info@theartofkda.com.
Perfect. And to all of our listeners, if today's conversation resonated with you, then be sure to check out Kristen's work at the 2025 Black History Month exhibition at the QEP CCC and follow her journey online. And if you liked this artist talk, please share this episode with your friends and your family and fellow creatives to keep the dialogue going. Kristen, thank you again, and to our listeners for tuning in. Until next time, stay inspired.